AP Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined advanced placement curriculum track to earn a series of distinctions upon graduation. This journey enables academically prepared students to pursue college-level studies throughout 17 AP courses in 5 subject categories while enrolled at OMA. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Consider the Mobius strip. Take a strip of paper, twist it, connect the ends. This connection forms a continuous loop. Seamless, infinite. That's how your healthcare should be too. At Tanner Health, the Mobius is our symbol and our promise, representing our continuum of care and our commitment that the services you need will be here for you always. We're not just changing healthcare, we're redefining it. See more at Tanner.org.
National headlines and the local stories you care about. WLBB Carrollton News Talk 1330 FM 106.3.
Community Voice here on News Talk 1330, FM 106.3, streaming live online at newstalk1330.com. Good morning. My name is Colin Worthington. My guests this morning representing the two school systems in Carroll County. I guess you count Bremen as well, but this morning we're talking with the superintendents of Carrollton City School System, Mark Albertus, and the Carroll County Schools System Superintendent, Scott Cowart. Going to talk about H-Bill, I believe it's 581. And decisions they made, and maybe clarify some things that a lot of listeners have had questions about. Public hearings, both of these school systems announced their intention to opt out of the floating homestead exemption at the beginning of this year. They had both had three hearings where people had an opportunity to, I guess, ask questions and make comments about it. And Carroll County School District, they had their final one yesterday. So both now are officially opted out. I don't believe that'll change. I guess we'll find out, you know, if there's anything can change before March 1st, which was the deadline during this program. Guys, good morning.
Good morning, Colin.
Good morning.
You surprised that we don't have snow this morning?
Well, we're thankful that we're back in school.
Yes,
Last week we had a snow day, which everybody enjoyed. But we're glad that the winter weather missed us this time, and we can get the kids back into school.
It's strange because normally we get it and others don't.
Yeah, and the South doesn't get
time.
It, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So we did get a little bit in Whitesburg last night, and so we had to pay attention this morning down in that area. Thank goodness we got them all at school and things are going well right now.
I guess that the line was cut off there at Whitesburg. Say Whitesburg got like 2 inches of snow. Nobody else got anything. Would you be able to just cancel or delay Whitesburg, or you'd have to do the whole county?
Oh, we could, but we made some provisions. There were some teachers that couldn't get in this morning and some students who had trouble getting in or out. And so we worked through that with the school and with those families, and obviously we'll make sure those kids are taken care of.
Because I saw Heard County yesterday. They said that the southern portion of Heard County is real bad, but the northern was fine, so they just canceled the whole county. I just didn't know if there was a rule or a mandate on that. But all right, guys, let us talk about House Bill 581. I'll try and give some details that I stole from the Georgia Municipal Association, and then we'll go from there. House Bill 581 was passed by the Georgia General Assembly during the 2024 legislative session, was signed into law by Governor Kemp in April of 2024. How it came about, entering the 2024 legislative session, many legislators were concerned with the rapid rise in property values across the state and, in turn, the rise in property taxes. The homestead exemption proposal came from the General Assembly and was first introduced in the Senate. The reason was to provide more certainty to homeowners who were concerned about the significant increases to the taxable value of homes in recent years. Now, under this bill, the local government If the local government does not opt out, then the homeowner knows their value may not increase by more than the rate of inflation, which prevents large jumps and helps them budget. This led to an amendment presented to voters in November. Voters statewide approved that amendment with about 62%. And I always do note that amendment, the one that voters approved, did state that it gives local taxers the option to opt out. So all that information was there on that amendment. We're going to talk about that again as both of the school systems have already officially opted out. Local municipalities are going through that process right now. And it seems like, after talking with people, that Carroll County government may be the only one that does not opt out of this. And I'll let them explain, I'll let Carroll County explain their rationale on that when the time does come. I think it'll be proposed to commissioners anyway, and they'll make that final decision. So, all right, guys, you had your final hearings. What has been the turnout, you know, for your three hearings? What was the turnout? What concerns did you find? And do you think that you alleviated those concerns from the public?
Sure. Well, we had a good turnout. We had three hearings, and we had several folks come to the hearings. I think one of the themes was we had some folks that were concerned that they were confused, that they thought that the senior exemption was going to go by the wayside, the senior school tax exemption. And we were able to clarify that. And once we did, they put the word out. It was some miscommunication amongst neighborhoods that this House Bill 581 was getting rid of the senior exemption. And, you know, that's the exemption that we have for, you know, there's partial exemption at 62, and then we have a full exemption at 65. So we were able to clarify that as well. We had a couple of folks that were talking about how the voters, you say 62-63% approved this, and that there was we tried to clarify that in the statement, in the question on the ballot, that it did provide local municipalities and school systems with the ability to opt out, and that was the process we were going through and looking at everything. We had good discussions with folks about that we wanted to keep the local control here, that we already have a mechanism to lower or raise taxes, and that's setting the millage rate every August, September. We set the millage rate, and you know, and we had to remind them that, you know, with these assessments the last couple of years, actually this past August, we heard the people that were you know, let us know that the assessments, they were concerned about the taxes, and so we rolled back the millage. We did the rollback rate this year, and just trying to get across to everyone that we would like to keep these decisions local, and then also not tie the hands of future school boards with being able to look at what the need is in the community at that time in whatever year, and utilizing the mechanism that we currently have in place to either increase or lower taxes, which is the millage.
And you talk about future school boards. If a jurisdiction elected to opt out of the House Bill Homestead Exemption, they will not have an opportunity to opt in the future, and vice versa, and will have the Homestead Exemption permanently, or won't be able to access it permanently. But there is a suggestion that maybe a method to remove such jurisdictions or added jurisdictions in the future is possible, but that would require a change to general law or constitutional amendment done by the legislature. How about you, Scott? I mean, obviously, you have a bigger population to deal with, and I suspect you probably had more people reaching out to you guys or speaking.
We had our second and third public hearing yesterday. We had really good crowds at all three of them, you know, a good-sized crowd. And, you know, I was really pleased. It was a really good civil conversation. People were concerned. A lot of misinformation or confusion, as Dr. Alberta said, about the senior exemption going away. And, of course, we clarified that. But also just some of them felt like the current homestead exemption may be going away. And we spent a lot of time clarifying that is not accurate. So that was a great conversation. And then voters were asking all kinds of questions around, you know, the assessment process, the setting of the millage rate, the tax that, you know, burden that our local citizens have. And it was, you know, a good back and forth. We had those that spoke, you know, that wanted us to stay in. But we also had people who spoke and said, you know, they felt like we needed to opt out for the reasons that Dr. Alberta said, to continue to make sure that local boards of education in the future had the ability to use the mechanism that's currently in place. You know, that we as a board, and we're very proud that the last three consecutive years our board has lowered the millage rate because they have heard the voters. And that mechanism is there for us, and it allows our future boards of education to continue to do that, but also make that decision, you know, if there are needs that that needs to happen, that they can look at that funding opportunity at the point and then also work with our local taxpayers.
Now, and I saw some people thought that, you know, they were like, you know, I'm being taxed enough already, but this is not a tax increase. The vote to opt out is not a tax increase, but, I mean, it does open the door for the possibility to take another action later, which would result in a tax increase, as opposed to shutting it down.
Absolutely. There's nothing about this that brings about a tax increase, and that was a point of confusion to do. But, you know, as we look through that, you know, I think our board, and I know the Carrollton City Board is the same way, really pride ourselves on being good stewards of taxpayer money. And, you know, we work really hard to have good school systems here in Carroll County, you know, both in the city and the county. And I think they will try to balance the need for those resources and making sure we've got great teachers in our classrooms, providing them with the facilities and everything they need to do good work. There's always room for improvement, but I think making that decision and still being able to lower the millage rate like we have is a testament of what we can do. And I think our board hopes that our citizens will continue to trust that we have the best interest, obviously, of our students, but also of our local taxpayers as we make those decisions.
Can both you guys, either you guys, say that you'll recommend the millage rate rollback this year? I mean, whether it's, I don't want to say it's a political move, but just, I mean, just kind of reassure people based on what maybe they've gone through this year with that decision. Is that, you know, because again, well, is that something that you guys will strongly consider pushing your board to approve a rollback?
Well, but obviously, you know, as Dr. Alberta said, we'll look each year at what the values come back at, and we'll look at that opportunity. And we've had that opportunity the last 3 years. And I think my Board of Education will be committed to continuing to look at that opportunity and if it's available to take advantage of it for our taxpayers.
Yeah, I mean, we look at it each individual year, what's going on in the community, what's going on with the economy, what's going on with our budget and the needs and different needs, and we look at it. And just like Mr. Cowart says, we try to be good stewards, and our you know, the Board of Education really look at it every year and analyze it. It's one of the biggest things that they do.
Mm-hmm. All right, I got to take a break here, but let me ask this one question, though. Each year when you guys decide whether to maintain the millage rate or roll it back, I guess what are examples of reasons that you would need to increase the revenue you collect each year? I mean, is it based on, I mean, do you need to keep adding teachers? Are there positions? I mean, do you need?
Well, both of our school systems are growing school systems. If you look at the data over the last 3 to 4 years, in our system, we've grown 1,400 students. So we've got to be able to, you know, pay for those additional students, because we have to have teachers to teach those additional students. We have to have the supplies, the resources, the technologies to go along with those additional students. So a growing school system is faced with needs. You know, there are systems in our state that are not growing or either losing enrollments, which is a different dynamic. Fortunately, neither one of our systems are in that particular piece. But there's a second piece I think really needs to be said here, is that when we look at budgets every year, and I'm just thinking about last year's budget and what we were looking at, the largest percentage of increase in our budget last year were things that were mandated from the state. It was not decisions my local Board of Education was making locally about things we were doing, but it's state passing on things that they're doing at their level. For example, you know, health insurance is a big one, and we just found out at the end of last week they're fixing to do that again next year to a tune of several million dollars. We have to account for that in our budget, which essentially means every year there are things that we're pulling back on to try to mitigate some of those increases in state you know, mandated expenditures, so that we can keep our budget in range, so that we can potentially look at a rollback.
I needed to ask this too before we take our break. Equalization, would that have been affected if you guys would opt in the money you get from the state? If you would have stayed opt into this, would that have affected how much money you do get from the state?
Equalization, potentially. We're studying that, quite honestly, Colin. But the thing that would have gotten effect is what's called local fair share. Every school district in the state has 5 mils of tax that come off the top for what they call local fair share every year. Okay, it goes across the state into a pot, so to speak, and it's redistributed back out to everybody. So the higher systems put in more money, far as wealth, lower systems wealth-wise put in less money, but still 5 mils of their tax. That is based off what fair market value. That is not based off assessed value. So when you cap the assessed value, but yet you're still, your local fair share changes based on the fair market value, that means that we would have seen a reduction in state funds because of this change.
Okay.
All right. Can I make a
quick? Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
I just want to add on, Mr. Cowart's spot on about the growth. We're both growing. But also, we both need to stay competitive with attracting teachers. We're in a teacher shortage right now across the board, across the state of Georgia, across the nation. And fortunately or unfortunately, we're now considered, with the sprawl, we're now considered pretty much metro. Okay, and we definitely compete with metro schools, and so when people will drive 30 miles for a higher salary, so we've got to stay competitive with the metro schools as far as what they're paying teachers and whatnot. So that's not the first and foremost thing, but we don't want to lose our talented teachers, and we want to make sure that we have teachers to fill all the positions. So, you know, the growth, and then also making sure that we're competitive with good teacher pay, all those things come together, and that's, again, those are decisions that our school boards have to make every year.
All right, time right now is 8:46. Let me take our first break here, and hopefully we can squeeze all the other information in within the next 15 minutes or so. Community Voice with my guests this morning, Scott Cowart and Mark Albertus, Carroll County School Superintendent, Carrollton City School Superintendent. We'll come back with more Community Voice after this.
The customized academic scholar journey at Oak Mountain Academy is individually designed to provide students with a personalized, clearly defined academic track that earns the student a series of distinctions upon graduation. This journey enables academically driven students to pursue a focused, rigorous course of study personalized to their wants and desires. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Consider the Mobius strip. Take a strip of paper, twist it, connect the ends. This connection forms a continuous loop. Seamless, infinite. That's how your healthcare should be too. At Tanner Health, the Mobius is our symbol and our promise, representing our continuum of care and our commitment that the services you need will be here for you always. We're not just changing healthcare, we're redefining it. See more at Tanner.org.
Hey, 47, welcome back to the Community Voice. Colin Worthington with Scott Cowart, Carroll County School Superintendent. Mark Albertus, Carrollton City Schools Superintendent. Let's talk about communication during this segment. Do legislators, when this first came down and I saw that, I was like, I mean, it kind of felt like, you know, you guys were getting ambushed. I mean, you know, it did feel like, okay, well, we're going to have to do this now based on legislation. Then you guys would have to think about it and, you know, and do all the studying and things. Do you communicate with legislators? Did they reach out to you before this was done? Did our local legislators seek you out, or how did you guys learn about that this was going to happen, or, you know, possibly happen?
I think you know, across the state, people were talking about the assessments. I think across the state, and you know, this came out of, you know, legislators wanting to affect positive change and whatnot. But again, going about it and taking it out of the hands of the local government, that's kind of where, you know, we come down on that. We want to make sure that we have the ability to look at what the situation is every year. And so, you know, our local legislative team, they're a great team. We're really blessed to have quality individuals representing us and everything. And we try to communicate every year. You know, and this bill, you know, was kind of, you know, it was being crafted, and then when it came down, our trade organizations, our professional organizations really did a good job of explaining it to us at the different conferences and putting things out communication-wise and everything. But this very much was something that across the state people wanted to put on the ballot. And again, you know, when you put these questions on the ballot, you know, the people that are crafting the questions, they're really wanting it to pass, you know. And so it's just how things work.
Well, but, I mean, it's almost a false flag because, I mean, they're saying, hey, you know, I mean, if people didn't study this up, they're reading that first part of the question and they're thinking, all right, I'm going to get some tax relief.
Yes, sir.
And but then, you know, but then I guess another group of senators insisted that, you know, the option to opt out in there. And I guess that's what I was thinking is the burden on you guys. You guys are going to have to take the blame for this. And you feel like it's important. You feel like you needed to opt out of it. But how about your own communication? Do you think you guys
talked? Let me address the communication initially first a little bit there, Colin, because I think you make a very good point, and I agree with Dr. Albertus. I mean, we're very fortunate to have good representatives and senators who work closely with us every year, and we talk about a lot of things. I think we wish that things could have been done a little differently. Is there was never any real conversation back with the school districts about what the potential impact could have been. Mm-hmm. And so our Board of Education members or his or our CFO, none of us were ever involved in that. So what would the impact have been if this had been in place the last 5 years? So we can understand before we craft some type of ballot question exactly what potentially that is. And we wish that had been a little bit more robust. That would have helped us out, quite honestly, as we look to try to communicate with our public then and try to understand, you know, the ramifications. Because we had to jump in and do that and find a methodology to do a look back and say if it had been in place and if they had applied it the way they say they were going. Because until this week, nobody even knew how they were going to – what index they were going to use to apply it. They're going to use the CPI. They decided that this week. But so again, I think that's the part we wish that had been handled differently, and I think that would have helped some. I will say that to Dr. Albertus's point, both of our boards of education have been studying this since back late summer. Mm-hmm. I mean, so this is not something they just started looking at in December. You know, it was on our agenda for every board meeting from August on. And we would provide them updates and information, and we immediately started looking at that impact study to try to get information for our board and provide it. And then every time something would come out, we would try to update the board. But again, I think up front, if there had been more discussion, you know, holistically about we've got this really good idea, because they, as he said, they want to help our taxpayers. We want to help our taxpayers. But it's got to be a partnership. We've got to work together collectively on think about how we do that and the structure of how we do that and is there ways to do that and not have the potential negative impact on the local decisions.
How about your own communication with the public? I mean, if they're still coming out, you know, these hearings at the point, you know, the last three opportunities, I mean, could you guys have done a campaign like you would with, you know, a splossed campaign or something like that? Or did you just not have all the information in time? I mean, you know, for people still have questions up to the last second, it just seems like, you know, could there have been more communication? You know, even what you're telling me today.
Well, again, we've had it on our agenda at every board meeting we've discussed, and we take public input at every board meeting and try to inform. And, you know, I think you can always look back and wonder if you could have done a better job of communication. We talk about communication is the enemy you never defeat. Mm-hmm. This is a case where, you know, I think that may – but we feel good about the public hearings. We feel good about the input. And, you know, again, the citizens, you know, were very clear about their thoughts, but they're very fair in their thoughts too. Again, so we will continue to answer questions and try to get as much information out there as we can.
And they likely won't see anything. I mean, any change, you know, in the coming year, 2 years. I mean, when would this have affected, do you think? If you guys would have stayed in, when would they have seen the benefits of this? Immediately or 2 years down the road or what?
I'm not quite sure on that. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been maybe the calendar year, start of the calendar year, the next year. But I'd have to clarify that.
Okay, you were about to say something.
No, I was just saying, you know, communication and just education in general, I think, you know, it's one of those things where when you when you have something like this, I think a lot of people start looking at it, and I think it's good. And, you know, a lot of people think that we do the assessments, that the school boards do the assessments. And so that's a clarification that we've had to kind of talk with through people. That's a tough thing, job to do, but we don't do that. So a lot of people, you know, at the hearings and other places are confused about that. And I think it's just, when you go through this process, I think a lot of people study up on it, which is a good thing, and they kind of figure out how it works. And again, the processes that we have in place to make sure that we can bring relief to the community if that, you know, is relevant for that particular year.
Okay, I'm going to try and talk about the Promise Scholarship. We'll have about 4 minutes when we come back from this break. Community Voice brought to you by Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy.
The World Language Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined, curriculum-based track to acquire essential knowledge and skills for success in biliteracy fields of study. The successful completion of this journey provides colleges with a method to recognize a rigorous foreign language immersion experience for all students at Oak Mountain Academy. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Consider the Mobius strip. Take a strip of paper, twist it, connect the ends. This connection forms a continuous loop, seamless, infinite. That's how your healthcare should be too. At Tanner Health, the Mobius is our symbol and our promise, representing our continuum of care and our commitment that the services you need will be here for you always. We're not just changing healthcare, we're redefining it. See more at tanner.org.
.856, welcome back to the WLBB Community Voice. David Hicks checking in this morning, watching us, former school superintendent for Bremen. He said, thank you guys for the work you do. This last 4 minutes, I do want to talk about the Promise Scholarship. At the end of Thanksgiving, or after Thanksgiving, there was a list of schools released that were considered 25, I'll say at least performing, 25, I can't remember the phraseology, you know I've talked about this, but the 25% of the schools in Georgia, maybe that had lower grades than the rest of the 75%. But I guess the standard, the way they calculated that, was uncertain for a lot of people. They put up one list, had five Carroll County schools, had one Bremen City school. Second list, the Bremen City school was removed. The list came back out, still the five Carroll County schools, and that's been pulled since for maybe 3 weeks now. So I guess they're recalculating what that does. What do you know about that? When they'll put that out, the calculation, do you think the five Carroll County schools will be on there to benefit? I don't have time to even explain what that Hope Scholarship does, but just try and get some kind of comment from you.
I'd be glad to. They did put the original list out, and by law, it says they had to put it out by December 1st is the reason it came out on that date. And they realized there were some issues with the list, and so they pulled it back, and they're reworking some of it, but it should be coming out in here in the next week or so, because it's also time for the Georgia Department of Education to put out their accountability list. And that's one of the things people I think probably uncertain of. You've got GOSA, which is the Governor's Office of Student Achievement, which administers the Promise Scholarship, and then you've got the Georgia Department of Education, who is the entity that holds our schools accountable every year, okay, which is two different entities, and they're not working together on this. So there's two different ways to look at school accountability. So the Georgia Department of Education accountability list will come out somewhere in the next week or so. So GOSA will come back out with their list. The second piece of that I don't think was very clear is they went back and GOSA used a 2019 calculation rather than using the current accountability calculation that DOE uses, that right now our schools are held accountable on. So that was some of the confusion to do that. So we're working, to make sure that we understand it. The biggest thing is we'll make sure we support any family that could be involved, and make sure we can provide them with accurate information. But the biggest thing is always, when you've got you know, 20-something schools, and you're working every year to make sure that each school can be the best it can be. You know, what are we doing to make sure that we're providing premier experiences on site, that we've got really good teachers, like Dr. Alberta said, that we're working with every individual student to make sure that we're meeting their needs and improving the quality of what we're doing. So it's a little confusing, but it's something that we're going to work with families on.
I got 30 seconds. That's why I want to remind people the Promise Scholarship, it awards maybe $6,500 to students who attend a certain group of schools, and they're allowed to use that money to go to private school. It does come out of the local school's budget, though, right? Out of the money allocated
to
you.
Allotment, go ahead.
No, I just want to say we're blessed here to have great schools, great leaders, great teachers in all of our schools across the county in the entire area. You know, this was a statewide voucher initiative, and our local legislation did not lead the charge on this. They know that we have really strong schools. Our parents know that we really have strong schools. We're blessed across the board to have great educational opportunities. So, you know, I think our parents know, and our community members know, that all of the schools are strong and we're moving in the right direction. And go all the way back to the taxes and different things, this is all interconnected, and we want to give the best opportunities for our kids in this area. And you know, and I think our parents know that.
All right, guys, wish we had more time. 8:59 right now. Stay tuned for national news. This has been the Community Voice.
Thank you, Colin.